What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Don Reeve, who's been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detectives shaken, to find the Southside Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, The Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, The Scare on Prime Video, now streaming.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, we're back.
Yay!
Dun, dun, dun.
And being back, we're going to dive right into a contest winner that Xena been promoting all Xenovember?
Xenovember.
Well, that's what I thought, but I feel like the name kept changing.
It did. I was just out of control.
That's why we love you. So first and foremost, we wanted to announce our official contest winner of the Bloody Disgusting Bundle, which is a Bloody, Bloody, Bloody Disgusting t-shirt, the Bloody Disgusting Enamel Pin sticker pack, and free year-long subscription to That's an amazing prize.
Isn't it? I want it.
Congratulations to the Twitter handle, at AshXAshes.
Yay!
Woohoo!
And the question submitted that ended up winning this prize was, if you were to teach a Horror 101 class, what three films would you show your class? That is a tough question, so I am immediately going to defer to Megan.
Oh, gosh. As in my head, I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's so hard. How do you narrow it down to three? Well, if it's a Horror 101, I feel like you have to go back to the classics that kind of set the foundation for everything. So... Something like The Exorcist, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and Halloween, probably, I feel like would be a pretty good base.
Those are good ones. How about you, Xena?
You know, I love that angle, but I also want it to be, you know, me. So I want to, you know, reach for like, you know, those types of horror movies where it's like, follow your dreams, aspirational type of horror. So I'm going to go with Excision from 2012.
Oh.
Sorry,
guys.
Like,
screw 101.
And the neon demon. And then as a bonus, she didn't ask this, it will be Pearl. Because you know what? You should be following your dreams. That's a part of Horror 101. Kind of.
Horror 101 for Xena's follow your dreams.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Follow your dreams.
This is a tough question that I probably am taking way too seriously, so I'm going back and forth on it a lot, but I think a combination of both Megan and Xena.
Okay. First
of all, for me, it would have to be Jaws. No nice. Secret that I'm a massive Jaws fan. Mostly...
Jaws?
Yeah, I know. It's weird, huh?
That's crazy.
It's the combination of the getting the right casting. You know, like how you actually get that interaction, but also how a massive failure of a production can turn into one of the greatest movies of all time. awesome. And then Blair Witch Project. Classic. It's one of the original found footages, and as far as I'm concerned, it's still the one that ticks all the boxes, that still mm-hmm. accomplishes all the things that modern found footages are trying to recapture and not necessarily quite nailing. And then I'm going to go the Xena route, and I was going to say Rosemary's Baby because I'm a massive fan or recent convert, but I'm going to have to say X.
Yeah.
A good example of a new age horror movie that can still play with classic tropes, but like multi-layers, like kind of a progression of horror through time. So yeah, I took that way more seriously than I thought I was going to. Maybe it was my vacation. I'm recharged and I'm more
recharged, ready to take everything serious.
Nah, I don't know about that. First call.
Happy horror days ahead, bloody podcast, bloody disgusting podcast. My apologies. I got excited when I was supposed to leave a message. So my name is Donnie, and I'm from New York, and I am calling to ask a question to you all. So what is, or who is, your favorite family in horror? And just to give you an example, one of my favorite families of all time in horror is from Tobe Hooper's Poltergeist, and it's the Freeling family, played by Joe Beth Williams and Craig T. Nelson. I just think that they're wholesome, they're charming, and they've got a little spiciness to them, as Zena would say, because as they put the kids to bed, they decide to spark one up and relax a little before all of the ghosts and poltergeists come out to play. So I'd be curious, who are your favorite families in horror? Or better yet, who would you like to be a part of, a family member part of the horror movies out there? So thanks so much, and sorry for all the rambling. Keep up the good work. Bye-bye.
Great question. I honestly don't think about the families in horror movies very much. Like, as a family structure outside, like, you know, the classics, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And so I'm going to say the Firefly family. Okay. Mostly because I feel like I want to be on, if I'm going to be with them or against them, I feel like I'd rather be with them just because I don't want to be on the other side of it and suddenly have them, me digging my own grave or turned into a mermaid. Yeah, not fun. Don't want to be there, but if I have to. That was a way darker answer this time. How about you, Zena?
So, okay, I split it up. So favorite, I really like the Meeks family from Frailty. So from 2001.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I thought that they were a pretty cool family. I mean, their dad really believed it. And kind of like you, John, it was just kind of like, I don't know if I would want to be there, but I'd rather be there than be against you.
Yeah.
And then, so that's just like a favorite. But then the family I would actually want to be a part of, I want to be a part of the LaDamas family in Ready or Not. They seem like they had a good time. And we all go out at the same time. So what? It was fun. We might explode. And just for a little razzle dazzle, I do like the tethered Wilson family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're creepy, they're charming, they're wearing red. I look really good in red, so that's why.
You know, and rabbit prepared right is pretty tasty. So.
Hey.
How about you, Megan?
I want to be dull and be like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Wait,
family,
do you like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
Do you?
I do. But when you look at the whole entire franchise, it's all about family, and the family changes. There's new members. There's like crazy people who just get adopted into this clan.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter who they are. Like, do your thing, cuz she just got introduced to the family, and they're like, we will kill for you. And there's something really sadistically sweet about that.
That is super sweet. Like, you're right.
The family, the bond is the family. Doesn't matter who you are. Just don't go into their house, and maybe you'll be okay. I don't know. But yeah, they're all about family in that franchise. The entire thing.
I think Megan is exposed to massive oversight of Hollywood right now, not having a Fast and Furious and Texas Chainsaw Massacre crossover.
They're family.
Because it's all about family.
Can you imagine poor Bubba trying to drive a truck?
Aww.
I believe in him.
we do believe in Bubba.
That's all right. If Tyrese can go to space, Bubba can drive a truck. It's fine.
Yeah.
that movie.
Speaking of, it's fine. Welcome to the Bloody Disgusting Podcast. Everyone, the podcast where we discuss all the disgusting things we love in the horror world. And to help us discuss the disgusting, you know her as lead movie critic for Bloody Disgusting, horror movie fanatic and journalist Megan Navarro. Hey, Megan.
I'm back.
Yay!
Hello.
You know her from YouTube channel and website Real Queen of Horror, and infinite love for the genre, and head of Bloody Disgusting's TikTok, who has been running our show for the last month single-handedly. Zena Dixon.
Hey,
Zena.
Hello, I missed you guys. Yeah, we're reunited.
Dun, dun, dun. The Dark Trio. Full power.
And I'm John. If you're listening to this on Wednesday when the episode drops, you hope your week's been filled with all the best kinds of horror. And if not, we're going to do a quick round the table for the movies, books, games, or anything else in horror that are making the three of us smile right now. Maybe there'll be things that'll make you smile, too. So, Zena, what's been filling your heart this week?
So, I checked out the South Korean series Bargain on Paramount Plus. It came out 2022. Men are lured into a remote hotel, only to be caught up in an organ trafficking ring. After an earthquake, the survivors fight to escape. So, yeah, this series is so unhinged. I really love it. And this is pretty much in the trailer, but it opens up where this man is paying. He's trying to pay this young girl to do some things with her because she says that, oh, I've never done it before, right? And so next thing you know, he's on a table and his organs are up for sale. It's like a public auction. And things are just, they get crazy right away. This one is raw, it's violent, it's dark, it's a little funny. You think like the beginning is chaotic, but again, it's in the synopsis. So once the earthquake happens, whoa. So it's really good. And no spoilers, but if you are going to watch the series, don't get attached to anyone because sometimes people are not what they seem. And, you know, I know not a lot of people have Paramount Plus, but I feel like if this series was on Netflix, I think that it would be like people would be losing their minds over it and stuff like that. So, and people who I do know who check it out, they really love it. It's only 6 episodes and it's about 35 minutes long. But yeah, I'm really, really into it. I had a really good time watching it. So highly recommend that one.
Nice.
Then the next thing I checked out, I watched Dream Demon from 1988 on Prime Video. A young woman who's about to be married begins having these terrifying dreams about demons. When she wakes, the demons are real and begin committing gruesome murders. So this is in the trailer. The movie opens up where this woman, she's about to get married, but then she's like, I can't. And so then her husband slaps her. So then she slaps him back and his head goes flying off. It is, there's like blood shooting up everywhere. People are surprised. And right then and there, I knew I needed this movie in my life. I was cheering it on. But yeah, I don't feel like this one's going to be for everyone, but it's because it is very, it's very dreamy, disoriented, like fever dreamish, you know. I really was into it. Like the two leading women, the complete opposites. One is very like school teacher, let me bake you some cookies, you know, and then the other one's like punk rocker. And it's just like a really awesome mix. And I feel like it has like a Nightmare on Elm Street vibe as well as a Hellraiser vibe, which I won't go into more detail with that, but if you like those two, I think that you might like it. I do feel like this is like an 80s gem. And again, it may not be for everyone just because a lot goes on into it, but it's really good. And I think his name is Timothy Spall. He is incredible and he's disgusting, but he is incredible in this one. So yeah, I think that you should check this one out if you haven't seen it. I had a lot of fun with it.
Nice. Cool.
How about you, Megan?
I went into this movie knowing that Godzilla's in it. I watched Godzilla Minus One. I say it like that because it's in theaters now. I didn't really watch any trailers because it's Godzilla. You know Godzilla's going to be in it. People were raving about it. I didn't know it was a period piece. It is set, you know, right after World War II, the first couple of years right after that, as Japan is, they're already devastated by the war. And then you've got a Godzilla threat. And it is really, really good. It is definitely heavy on human drama of, you know, you've got a kamikaze pilot who did not do his job and he's dealing with that and honor and this new threat in the form of Godzilla. And John, I think, would really like this movie because there are definitely quite a few sequences that harken back to Jaws. A lot of it is set at sea. And there is, you know, a lot of they're in a rickety boat for war reasons, and you've got Godzilla chasing them down. So it's actually really, really, really good. The hype is real. Highly recommend. And then I watched Gonjiam Haunted Asylum because I was researching something, and I've seen this numerous times, and sometimes you just need familiar comfort.
And because it's awesome.
It is awesome. I watched it on Peacock. I think it's streaming on a few different apps, but for sure it's on Peacock. That's where I watched it. And if you are not familiar, it's basically South Korea's first found footage film set around a horror web series that, kind of like Deadstream, they just really want to hit monetization. And so they decide to paranormal investigate one of the most haunted places, which is, you know, Gonjiam, the haunted asylum. So, yeah, it is... At first glance, like, it just seems like kind of a conventional found footage horror movie. Really well done. The scares are really great. But the more you kind of, like, research it, this is one of those found footage movies that operates functionally as a great horror movie. Doesn't matter where you're from. But if you are either researching or savvy or from South Korea, you kind of notice that a lot of the imagery and the kind of mythos is purposely hearkening back to kind of tragic periods in South Korea's history. So there's kind of like a dual layer or multiple layers to these scares. It's like on the, you know, on a surface level, they just are great scares and they give you the goosebumps. But then you're kind of peeling back why these choices are there, you know, what they're referencing. And you're like, it kind of, I don't know, it just adds more context that you could dig into or you can just enjoy as is, which I love that. So, yeah.
Nice.
That's what I watched.
Awesome.
I made my way to the theaters, I think partially because Megan got a pull quote on this particular movie.
Yeah.
But why not? The kids were out of the house and my wife and I decided to go see a movie. So we went and saw 2023's Thanksgiving. After a Black Friday riot ends in tragedy, a mysterious Thanksgiving-inspired killer terrorizes Plymouth, Massachusetts, the birthplace of the infamous holiday. So I think, I don't know if I've really mentioned this on the podcast. I'm sure I have. I'm not a particularly big Eli Roth fan. I generally don't enjoy his dialogue a lot. Comes across as very frat bro-y, no matter whether he's delivering it or someone else is. And there's more of that in this, especially pre-riot. There's kind of a part where I'm like, yeah, Eli Roth wrote this. But that said, once that's that initial catalyst is out of the way, I thought the second and third acts were really enjoyable. Like, it was a lot more fun. It felt like a classic horror movie. Eli Roth is a like full of horror knowledge. Like, hearing Eli Roth talk about horror is really fun because he's clearly a massive fan of it, and he's a historian of it. So it's nice to see that he is looking or just playing with the concepts and the tropes and making them fun and just creating just a good, fun new slasher that is not over, which we'll talk about later, I'm sure.
Yeah. I don't know. I just wanted to mention specifically how refreshing it is. Like, nothing against all of the great slashers that we've had recently, but it's really refreshing to have just a meat and potatoes, straightforward 80s slasher, but without the 80s aesthetic. It's a contemporary vibe and look, but with the sensibilities of the 80s that we kind of miss. There's no twist. There's no hook. It's just straightforward, which is refreshing.
Yeah, I will admit, I am mildly bummed out that it's not like the trailer and they didn't shoot it on film and make it look grainy, just because I really, the trailer that originally appeared in the Grindhouse movies is great. And a lot of the imagery you see from that, they bring right back. Like, you couldn't make this movie and not have that imagery. That would be ridiculous. Be like doing Machete without any of that imagery too. Like, well, yeah, you have to do some of it. Yeah. But yeah, it was, both my wife and I kind of left the theater like, that was a lot more fun than we thought it was going to be. And you know, Patrick Dempsey back in horror after a long departure. I'm guessing he hasn't been in horror since Scream 3, has he?
I don't even know if he has. So I need to look it up, but yeah, Scream 3 for sure. This was definitely the first slasher, and he, you know, to have this open a week after he was awarded Sexiest Man by People Magazine.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah,
Nice.
They should have marketed that.
They totally should have. But what are you going to do? Like America's sexiest slasher movie or something. Like just because he's in there. Oh, well. Maybe the next one that we'll talk about later. And then this is a weird pull, but it was on Tubi and I was curious because of the title. I watched 1965's Monsters Crash the Pajama Party. Yeah.
That one's cute.
Or Pajama Party. Yeah. So, all right, hold on, because I'm about to tell you the entire movie. A group of teenage girls spends a night in an old dark mansion as initiation into a college sorority. What they don't know is that the building is actually the headquarters for a mad scientist and his hunchbacked assistant who are experimenting on turning humans into gorillas. That's the movie. It's 30 minutes long. It is a grand total of 30 minutes long, and 30% of the movie is taken up by the initial credits, in which clearly they rented some gorilla costumes and were just really excited to have gorilla costumes, because there's no opening title scrawl. There's a narration, and then they just narrate who does each job. Well, a gorilla kind of plays that part. It's
okay.
So I was curious. I looked up old reviews of it, and it's not good. I have to imagine it's
it's cute.
It's more that it's like, it is the campiest, most bizarre, arguably poorest made movie you're gonna see, but it's almost infectious in that way where you're like, this is ridiculous what I'm watching. But it's only 30 minutes. I can get through that. And really, honestly, it's only like 20 minutes. And like the dialogue, the random characters that suddenly get introduced with no explanation. Like the fact that this is initiation into a college sorority is a moot point. That does not actually matter. That is just to get them in the house. It's just go watch it on Tubi. If you got 20 minutes, like just or 30 if you want to watch the people in the gorilla costumes. It's something, but again,
it's something.
Yeah, it was kind of endearing too. I'm not going to say it's good, but it was kind of fun to watch just this weird campy ridiculousness. It's kind of like watching an old episode of the Monkees TV show.
Except
not as good. For those of you, I have just massively dated myself on knowing that there was a TV show about the Monkees band.
It kind of reminded me of like Scooby-Doo, and I kind of wonder if like Scooby-Doo from 1969, if it was inspired by this movie.
Without a doubt. So, yeah, that's like, yeah. There was like a Gilligan's Island around that time. It was the same sort of stuff. They all kind of kept treading the same thing, like running in one door and out another door. And like just like, because it was trying to be tongue-in-cheek funny, but the laughs were kind of like, oh. So it's like, all right, sure, why not? It was an experience. And, you know, didn't cost me that much of my life. So why not? All right, before we move on, what did we watch and how did we watch it?
I checked out Bargain on Paramount Plus and Dream Demon on Prime Video.
I watched Godzilla Minus One in theaters now and Gonjiam Haunted Asylum on Peacock.
And I watched Thanksgiving in the theaters and 1965's Monsters Crash the Pajama Party on Tubi. All right, I don't need homework for this week for reasons that maybe I'll explain next week. Maybe I won't. Doesn't make any difference. So,
okay.
What would your life look like if fear was not an option? Find out in the new series, Them, The Scare. It's an all-new installment of the horror anthology now streaming only on Prime Video. The series takes place in Los Angeles in the early 90s, with the city on the edge of complete chaos. Deborah Iorinde returns this season as LAPD homicide detective Don Reeve, who's been assigned to solve a new case that has left even the most hardened detectives shaken, to find the Southside Slayer. As she gives everything to uncover the truth, something horrific and supernatural begins to haunt her and her family. Them, The Scare features the legendary Pam Grier, Luke James, Wayne Knight, plus many more, and is sure to keep you guessing at every turn. Horror fans, get ready for your new obsession. This is something you do not want to miss. And remember, fear is not an option. Watch Them, The Scare on Prime Video, now streaming.
Enough about what we've been watching this week. It's time for Megan to bring us up to speed on the news and trending topics in the world of horror. So what's been going on, Megan?
I think you know, John. I think what? You know.
He knows.
He knows. Because there's always second helpings when it comes to Thanksgiving. Eli Roth's Holiday Slasher is officially getting a sequel. Sony's TriStar plans on releasing Thanksgiving 2 in theaters worldwide in 2025. Eli Roth and Jeff Rendell are back to write the screenplay for the upcoming sequel. We're going to take a year off so we can really, really write a great script. We want to outdo ourselves, make it better than the first one, Roth teased. So, yeah, John Carver, he'll be back for seconds. The first film, an expansion of Roth's faux trailer scene in Grindhouse 2007, was released in theaters worldwide. It received rave reviews, earned $30 million globally in its first 2 weeks of release, with an impressive second week hold at negative 31%, so it didn't drop that much.
Wow.
So yeah, if you are not familiar, Thanksgiving is about a Black Friday riot that ends in tragedy, inspiring a mysterious Thanksgiving-inspired killer that terrorizes Plymouth, Massachusetts, the birthplace of the holiday. So yeah, more original slashers, which I, you know, again, we've been getting more of them, but I feel like so far they've mostly been like kind of a mashup of things.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you who haven't seen the movie, but maybe you know the tagline of "There Will Be No Leftovers." Maybe
there's gonna be leftovers. There was
leftovers. The leftovers being money.
There will be no leftovers. Yeah, you know. But I kind of, I don't know. I was trying to think of what kind of slasher icon, or not slasher, but modern horror icons. I think we've got Art can probably classify now, Art the Clown.
At this mm-hmm. point, yeah.
But do we have any other kind of contemporary?
Until Ghostface, I couldn't name anything for the last 30 years or 25 years, basically.
Yeah. So, I mean, if John Carver wants to be one, there's definitely a huge gap in the horror marketplace there. Not that you can just make a horror icon happen, but I feel like it's time. We need one. So, yeah. And then because the world of Stephen King adaptations is always growing, Francis Lawrence, who recently directed The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbird and Snakes, is on board to direct an adaptation of Stephen King's 1979 novel, The Long Walk. The project was previously set up at New Line, but has found a new home at Lionsgate. J.T. Molnar, who is behind recent festival hit Strange Darling, will write the script. Stephen King penned The Long Walk under the pseudonym Richard Bachman, first published in 1979. The novel is set in the future dystopian America ruled by an authoritarian. In The Long Walk, the country holds an annual walking contest in which 100 teens must journey nonstop and under strict rules until only one of them is still standing alive and receiving a prize. The story told of a 16-year-old walker named Raymond Garrity and the teens, some good, some bad, some mysterious, in his orbit. So really, it kind of sounds like maybe the director of Hunger Games is perfect for The Long Walk.
Yeah.
Have you read it, John?
Yeah, I have. It's a good book. I remember when it was originally announced that they were adapting it and thinking, that's a interesting one to adapt. I'm not sure how they're going to make it interesting visually, because it is so much the inner struggle of what's going on the walk and just kind of what he's seeing around him. But like so much Stephen King, there's so much inner characterization and stuff like that. They're going to have to change what's going on. They're going to have to spice up. Otherwise, visually, it's kids walking. It's kids walking and kids dying. And so I'll be curious to see like what they kind of do to build that out a little bit more. But it's a good book. I highly recommend people checking out. It's a fast read.
Well, that's good. Fast read on a slow walk.
Yeah. Well, it's not a slow walk. There is a speed. So.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a long walk. They're speed walking a long walk.
Yep. If you read it under a certain number of words per minute, you do die while you read the book. It's tough. I'm a slow reader. I got scared. Yeah.
Well, that's coming. I don't know. I guess the question at this point is what Stephen King book, short, or whatever has not been adapted at this point?
Yeah.
If he publishes it, they will adapt it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, keeping with themes of what we watched and what's news, there's more Godzilla. Godzilla's everywhere lately. So Godzilla fans are eating good right about now with Toho's Godzilla Minus One in theaters, Legendary's Monarch Legacy of Monsters airing on Apple TV Plus. And up next is Legendary / WB's Monsterverse that expands with Godzilla X Kong. How do you even say that? Godzilla and Kong? I don't know how you...
I think
give me one
I would
ticket
say,
for Godzilla yeah. X Kong, the new X Empire, please. It's going to be unleashed in theaters in April 12th, 2024, and the first trailer arrived over the weekend. The latest entry of the franchise follows the explosive showdown of Godzilla versus Kong with an all-new cinematic adventure, pitting the almighty Kong and the fearsome Godzilla against a colossal, undiscovered threat hidden within our world, challenging our very existence and our own. The epic new film will delve further into the histories of these titans, their origins, and the mysteries of Skull Island and beyond, while uncovering a mythic battle that helped forge these extraordinary beings and tied them to humankind forever. So Adam Wingard returns to direct the movie. He's joined by cast Rebecca Hall as Dr. Eileen Andrews, Brian Tyree Henry as fan favorite Bernie Hayes, Kaylee Hoddle as Gia, and Dan Stevens, Paula Jen, and Rachel House also join the cast. Mm. I love anytime Dan Stevens pops up in like anything. So
same. And with Rebecca yeah. Hall, woohoo.
Yeah. And then the screenplay for this one is written by Simon Barrett. You're next in The Guest. So yeah.
Awesome.
I have no idea who I saw the trailer. I have no idea what the new kaiju is. There was a lot of shadows and monsters on the screen.
So much like bright, vivid colors too.
Yeah. I was pretty confused about who I was actually looking at most of the time. But what the heck? Why not?
Big monsters. We love them.
Yeah. All right, listeners, your turn. What form of exercise do you most associate with horror? What happens when you multiply Godzilla by Kong? Little math joke after 160 episodes.
Sorry. It's just like, not funny, John. Gets me.
No, it was funny. That's why I laughed. A little giggle.
That's the reaction I was expecting.
It was like the dad joke gets the dad joke laugh rebuttal. That's what happened. I love it. We're back, guys. We're back.
That's Xena stepping in for our listeners right there. You can call or text us at 224-475-1040. The number's also in the show notes, or feel free to email us at bedisgustingpodcast@gmail.com. Finally, Xena's going to make all our lives easier and see if horror movie options and clue us in what's appearing soon we should be watching. So, Xena, what should we be watching?
We do have a good amount of horror coming our way. So this is going to be for Tuesday the 5th. So by the time this episode is out, first up, Devils will be available on Screenbox. This one is described as Face Off meets Freaky Friday when a homicide detective swap bodies with a serial killer. Then we have Everyone Will Burn. This will be on VOD. A strange girl may be linked to a local legend about stopping an impending apocalypse. Then Do Not Disturb will be available on DVD. Chloe and Jack travel to Miami for their honeymoon. I'm going to say a drug experience, and that because they feel like it will strengthen their relationship. However, they've been given a powerful strand that awakens a desire to eat human flesh. Woo! Okay. That one like sent me on a ride. Then Monsters of California. This one was, I believe it was out on VOD. It's still out on VOD and stuff like that. It came out last month. No, we're in December. It came out in October. Jesus. So now be available on DVD. In this one, there are teenagers who are on a quest for the meaning behind a series of mysterious paranormal events in Southern California. Then there's Something in the Barn. This will be available on DVD and Blu-ray. Bill moves his American family to Norway, where he inherited a family estate. There, Lucas discovers a mischievous barn elf from ancient folklore living in the barn who plots to get rid of the American intruders. Then on Thursday the 7th, we have Black Mold. It'll be available on Tubi. A photographer faces her past while exploring an abandoned facility. Then on Friday the 8th, William Brent Bell, he has a new horror coming our way, and it is called Lord of Misrule. This will be on VOD. So William Brent Bell, he directs directed Stay Alive, The Boy, The Boy 2, Orphan First Kill, many others. So in this one, a priest begins a desperate search when his daughter goes missing during the local harvest festival. As she uncovers secrets from the town's dark past, she must decide how much she's willing to sacrifice, and rescue the girl from the grip of evil. Then the cello, this will be available on VOD. An inspiring cellist learns that the cost of his cello is a lot more insidious than he thought. Then Raging Grace, this one was just in limited theaters this past Friday, so now it'll be available on VOD. Nothing is quite as it seems when an undocumented Filipina immigrant takes a job as a caretaker for a terminal ill man in a lavish home. She and her daughter soon become ensnarled by a terrible secret that threatens to tear them apart. Then we also have on Friday, A Creature Was Stirring. This will be available in limited theaters. Then it'll be on VOD next Tuesday, December 12th. Faith keeps her troubled teenage daughter tightly controlled by an illicit pill regimen in order to ward off a terrifying affliction. But after a Christmas burglar, their dark family secret may finally be exposed. I'm almost done, I promise. Then the sacrifice
it's
game.
A lot, right?
It's a lot. I'm so surprised. I still thought we were in October by this list. Then on Shudder, we have the sacrifice game in the 1970s. At a boarding school, two students stay behind during Christmas break. Things take a deadly turn when a murderous gang arrives at their doorstep, intent on summoning a demon. Then Walden, this will also be out on DVD and Blu-ray. It's going to be on VOD on Friday, but you can also own it on Tuesday, the 12th. So basically, this man, he pretty much just becomes unhinged once he finds out that he's terminally ill. Then we have The Portrait. This will be available on VOD. After her husband's tragic accident, a woman obsesses over a mysterious portrait that resembles him as he used to be. But then the portrait begins to terrorize her, and she must decide whether it's possessed or she's simply losing her mind. And then finally, on Tuesday the 12th, you'll be able to own Five Nights at Freddy's on DVD or Blu-ray. And also do not forget to subscribe to Screenbox. Woo!
You did it!
Made it. Xena needs a break after all that.
Oh my gosh.
And that's the Bloody Disgusting podcast for this week, everyone. If you'd like to read more from Megan, you can check out her reviews at BloodyDisgusting.com and on Twitter at HauntedMeg. Xena can be found on her own website, realqueenofhorror.com, and the YouTube channel of the same name, or at Lovely Xena on Twitter. And you can hear me on my weekly horror narration podcast, Creepy. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app, and feel free to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at BeDisgustingPod, or drop us an email at BeDisgustingPodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out all things Bloody Disgusting on TikTok at BeDisgusting. So for this week, I'm John.
I'm Megan.
I'm Xena.
Grab some popcorn, cozy up on the couch, and watch something you love. Just make sure it's something bloody. We're back.